I like the way you phrase that, living through this time, because I think that's a great segue into the album, because it's about things that you lived through for a great deal. So when this realization for you, or did you have a lot of self-reflection as the pandemic started? Was that a time for you to look back and just go over your life a little bit?
Absolutely. Oh my God. I think what it did was it realigns your priorities. Mm. I went, you know, for almost two decades, like 17 years of doing this, you know, like as a signed artist, I've done 9 albums and an EP. Sure. And I just got used to this pace, especially for the first 15 years. I just went, like crazy. I was a workaholic. I was addicted to working. I just got used to that pace, and you make a lot of sacrifices when you work at that pace, and you sacrifice relationships. And I think you sacrifice yourself as well. You can lose your identity a little bit, and your self-worth is trapped in things that sometimes aren't even real. And so I feel like COVID's kind of, it's reordered that priority list, and it's made me realize what really is important. And I think everybody's like that, like everyone that you speak to around the world, especially when you're in forced isolation.
Sure.
You know, we kind of got to the pinnacle of superficiality. And you know, highlight reels of life. You know, you looked at social media, all it was people posting about how great their life is, you know, legs with the ocean or the infinity pool in the foreground, you know, popping bottles of champagne and like being out in clubs and doing things that were quite indulgent and quite, you know, almost like showing off like how great our lives are. And I feel like one thing to come out of this pandemic is for people to actually realize it's okay to have crappy things happen in your life. Sure. Too, and to just wear it as a badge of honor almost. I feel like it's changed a lot for a lot of people. And for me, you know, Bronwyn's heard me talk about this quite a bit, but it's actually nice to talk to you, especially being in the Netherlands. There's a song that connected over there, right, called Before I Go, and it's been my biggest hit in the Netherlands personally. It's not my biggest hit everywhere else.
Sure.
But I just have this, it's really taught me the value of how a song can really be the right song for a certain place. Mm. But it was at a time, and people over there don't even really know, because I haven't really spoken about it much. You don't understand how important that was for me, like as an artist and as a human being, to have the support and the love that I received from the Netherlands. Like it, with that song, I was going through something that was really hard to deal with at the time. And that was the first song that I sat down to write for this album. And it was right after I'd gone through a really messy management split.
Mm.
And we hear about these things all the time. And unfortunately, people are kind of immune to it. And they go, oh, yeah, but management splits, a manager has screwed you over or done something to you. That's every artist. But it's not actually true. There are some beautiful managers out there where their heart is in the right place, and they would never do something untoward. They care, they love music. Sure. And they know the power of music. But I was in a position where I was with the same manager for like almost 12 years. We were best of friends. Our kids were the best of friends. Our wives, we were so entangled in each other's lives. And a manager, you place your whole life in their hands. You trust them so much. Mm. And I unfortunately uncovered some things that were heartbreaking, and I saw it as quite a big betrayal. And then it ended up being a much bigger betrayal, because it ended up going to court. Oh, and wow. Getting really ugly, and this guy's like a lawyer, and I'm obviously not a lawyer. So I felt very helpless and bullied, and like I was, you know, how someone can like make you feel dumb and make you feel like you're doubting your own truth. Like you think something's the truth, and someone can actually make you even doubt that. But this guy ended up getting arrested on 61 counts of fraud for over $1.15 million.
Wow.
So like it's not about the money. It's not how much money he took or money that he didn't pay or whatever. Like it's all of those memories that I thought were genuine memories with somebody that cared about me.
Hmm.
But could do that to you. Like, and so it leaves you in this weird space where you're so vulnerable. You don't know who to trust. I thought that was it. I thought that was my life and my career was done. At one point, I just didn't know what to do. Like I felt really alone. And so when I sat down and wrote Before I Go, dude, it was like such a healing song for me. It was my fight song. Hmm. It was me saying, no one can tell me when it's over, or try and put a ceiling on what I can achieve and put an expiry date on me and my gift. And every time I sung that, it meant something, but it didn't mean anywhere near as much as when I sung it in Amsterdam. That was like the last proper gig that I did.
Oh, okay.
COVID was there was we sold out a show at the Melkweg.
Mm.
And the crowd, I sung that twice in the gig. I've never sung the same song twice in one gig. And the crowd sung the whole song back to me. And I was just fighting tears at the time. And it was such a, like, you know, when life just does this and it's like it goes in full, whatever, you know, that saying is, it comes full circle. That's
right.
It. So anyway, that was a long-winded
No, that's a very interesting story because one, like you say, you work 15 years from a place of trust, and that trust is then betrayed, and then obviously that's very, discouraging in terms of what you want to do. But then it shows the power of music that a song can be written out of it, and a certain strength can rise out of it, and then also people around the world, in this case in the Netherlands, can find something in that song and apply it to their life. So
exactly,
yeah. I don't know if you have you spoken to any of the people in Amsterdam, just what they thought about the song.
Oh my gosh, all the time, like online, people are always writing to me about that song. And it's apparently, it's in the UK charts right now. Okay. There was a UK artist, she's like a musical theatre artist or something, that it's being played on BBC Radio 2 at the moment. I didn't even know about it. Like someone sent it to me and they were like, oh, someone's recorded your song, like a cover of your song, and it's getting played on radio in the UK. And I think it did exactly that. It reminded me the power of a song and how it can lift people, not just me. It was my fight song. I wrote it for myself at the time. Sure. But then people, they take it and it becomes a whole new meaning for them. And so music is beautiful. Like it's just, I've been doing this for a long time, but I just keep discovering more about how amazingly pure and beautiful music is and how powerful it is, and it's best job.
In terms of the songwriting then, because I don't know in what time span this is written. I believe some of the songs were written before the whole COVID thing, and then some.
Yeah, I mean, like more than half of the album was written before the pandemic. Yeah.
Because in terms of creativity, you write these songs, you have this plan to make an album, and then the pandemic hit and you have, I don't know, a half a finished album. What is your thought process then? How do you kind of continue? Did it boost your creativity, or was it the other way around?
I think it boosted my creativity. Like this is my studio where I'm sitting, and it's in my house, and I can record at any time of the night. It's fully sound. It's like a room within a room. It's crazy soundproof. Like look at these big Genelec speakers. Like, oh, you can't really see those, but there's like huge Genelec speakers in there. Yeah. And I can crank those. I've got a massive subwoofer behind as well. I can crank it at like 2 a.m. and no one can hear it. It's so good. Like it really did. It just increased the time that I could spend on stuff, you know, like I wasn't jumping on a plane every, you know, few days or, you know, I was still busy. I was recording The Voice. I'm a coach on The Voice over mm-hmm. here. And so I had that. That was weird as well, because half of the show we had the other coaches here. Then the other half, there was the two Australian coaches, me and another girl, Delta Goodrum.
Right.
And then Boy George was in the UK and Kelly Rowland from Destiny's Child, she was in LA. So they were just on these like two big plasma TVs in their chair, built into their chair, and we were recording as though it was live. Like it was,
okay.
We all adapted. And then, you know, like the crew couldn't come up to us. Everyone's wearing masks. And it was like, it felt like we were on a movie set or something. It was just weird, but we still powered through. We filmed that. And that was all I was doing. I was just doing that and writing music. So it was, it was a good time to make music, I thought. And I think also that isolation, it makes you more, it sounds very hippie, but makes you more in touch with yourself, because you're sure. It's just you and your thoughts. And so as a songwriter, I was able to process without distraction. And it was a really nice way to write, actually. I really enjoyed it. And then I was writing on Zoom, like Zoom calls like this, where there's a plugin I can put in Logic or in Ableton. I can put it on the master bus and the people I'm writing with on Zoom, I just send them a link and say I'm playing like piano or programming drums or recording vocals. They can hear the master bus output in real time streaming. So that in good quality to like 192 quality. So it was like a really interesting way to write. So I'm sitting there writing with someone in LA and London and I'm here like, and we're tossing around lyrics and it felt like we were in the same room. It was really cool. So I think it's opened up a lot of possibilities that otherwise, like I probably would have flown to Netherlands to write with some people there or flown to Sweden or flown to the UK or whatever. And I don't think I'm going to do as much of that anymore. Like I'll still come there to tour and to play shows, but I feel like COVID's taught us how to adapt and how to not. I don't know what it's like over there, but even here in Australia, even though things are open, people are working from home a lot more. Yeah. And it's I think it's going to change the world in a lot of ways for a long time.
Well, that's my hope. I hope that the silver lining is that this whole thing makes us realize how we've been treating ourselves, how we've been treating each other, how we've been treating the planet, how we've been kind of, because now it becomes, like you say, it becomes apparent, oh, I didn't need to go all the way over there. Or I didn't need to do the specific thing that I thought was essential, but it isn't. It isn't. I can easily do without it. So, and what I also find interesting, because you mentioned working on Zoom, and I think this was with Orphanage. And that's kind of, we talked about the bad side of the internet, the social media and the hype and all that stuff, but then you have the other side of modern technology, is where something like that is possible and we can connect in a sincere way, in a new way, in this pandemic. So I think there's a lot of silver linings to be found. If we want to,
and even like I would shoot over an MP3 while I'm on Zoom to my guitar player or something in Melbourne, and he'll just record something and MP3 it in the Zoom chat and go, hey dude, how do you like this? And like the Orphanage guys will grab a sample or something, like an actual recording, put it into the track and listen, and then go, oh, can you just change like at bar 35, just like go to the minor instead of what, like it was crazy how easy it was to work. Right. Like, and so, yeah, you're right. There's such good things that have come out, and I feel like it's made the world a little less shallow in a lot of ways.
Let's hope so. I'm still positive. And with what you mentioned as well, you mentioned a certain sense of positivity earlier. And I feel that is true for the entire record as well. Even though you cover very, very difficult topics and it is, at the end of the day, all you approach all these things from a very positive viewpoint. Was that kind of a conscious thing, or is it just how the songs fell out?
I think it's just who I am, you know. I think I feel like I'm a positive person. I don't I tend not to dwell on the negative. I think there's enough of that. Mm. And I think it's acknowledging, you know, I tattooed a word on my arm, legacy.
Mm.
And I the legacy I want to leave is that I added positivity to the world and that I didn't jump on the train of negativity and, sure. And that, you know, that my presence had a good impact on the world. So, you know, there's stuff that we can write about, there's stuff that we can talk about but I think there's enough of that. I think we need to hear messages like, hey, like, first of all, just fun messages like, let's just get together and hang again. Mm-hmm. Let's party. Let's be around each other and let's enjoy life. But then messages like, let's stand together and make sure we look out for the people that might feel alone. Let's celebrate the lives of people and not take them for granted. You know, I wrote Choir after losing one of my band members.
Right.
He was a dear friend and you know, we toured. The last tour I did with him was just me and him. And, you know, we had all these toys, we were looping and like had all these pads we were triggering and playing instruments. It was such a fun tour. And that was the last tour I did with him throughout Europe. And then he passed away while I was in LA.
Mm.
And so I wrote a song called Choir to celebrate his life. And that was, it was a really big song for me. He was actually my biggest radio song I've ever had.
Okay.
And that is like the perfect scenario where there's a song that it actually really means something to me, but also people who had experienced loss and grief, like they took that song and made it their own song. It was played at funerals everywhere. And like, so imagine the messages that people were sending me about how that song had, like, it was overwhelming. Right. And then it ended up winning Song of the Year, mm-hmm. like at our awards, like ARIA Awards, like our Grammys.
Sure.
And that was crazy because I never thought I would win that. I'd won a couple of other awards for like best video and things like that. But Song of the Year, everyone was like, well, Dance Monkey will get that. Like Tones and I is from Australia. And everyone thought Dance Monkey would win, me included. And that night I was hosting the ARIAs. So my head was in like trying to be funny and like trying to keep the whole night glued together. And so I wasn't even thinking I was going to win that. So it was a huge surprise. And then I had to perform the song after my speech, like immediately after my speech, because during my speech I burst into tears. And then I had to sing, and I didn't know. Like I had to sing so quickly after my speech. And then after that, the show was over, and I walked backstage and the choir that sung, they're all like Samoan and Islander Fiji, and they all had this song that they sung for me in their native language, and it was the most beautiful like island song, all in perfect harmony. Some of these guys are these huge islanders, you know, singing, and I lost it. It was just such, you know, and I talk about some of the tough moments, but there was also moments like that where it was the best moment of my life, you know, like just right. Such a validating, beautiful, purpose-filled moment. And so, yeah, it's definitely, as you said before, it's like an account of the last few years summarized into an album. And that's why there's so many ups and downs.
Well, that's life, right? Life goes up and down. It would be boring if it was one and the other the entire way through. But
exactly. But I think I learned that, like, when it comes to artists, that can't be all the time.
No, that's
like,
true.
You can't have such, like, monumental chunks of life all the time, especially every time you sit down to do an album. Like, you look at Adele, like, her albums have been like they've marked certain moments in her life, and you really feel like you've lived it with her and Ed, you know, like, but that's the truth I've discovered is that like not every album is going to be full of like dramatic highs and lows because life isn't like that. And sure. So you've sometimes got to like get inspiration from other places, but these last few years I've had plenty to sing about and write about.
Right. And then, well, one of the things, well, you mentioned the word truth, which is obviously the album of the title of the album. And this is very much all true to you. Which was the most difficult song then? Because Choir, like you said, is very personal, very about a difficult subject, but then it's a very positive song. It's instead of kind of grieving, it's celebrating somebody's life and the time you've enjoyed together. But so a song like Standing With You, was that a difficult one to write as well?
It was a very I felt like it was a song that needed to be written at a time when the world was going into lockdown and isolations. I wrote that in March. Okay. So everything, I was in LA. That was the last flight I went on. Everything was like getting pretty scary, and the US was getting quite scary. And there was also such a deep divide.
Right.
Where I was, you know, I was in LA at the time, and I'm writing with the orphanage on one hand. And then, you know, the orphanage is like, there's Trevor who's white and Zaire who's black. So I'm hearing even different accounts of like Zaire getting pulled over all the time on the exact same route that he drives, that Trevor drives, and Trevor's never been pulled over. And there's all this stuff happening and this division. Then there's COVID, and I'm sitting there like, it was quite an overwhelming sense of like, there's a lot happening right now. And there was a lot that was happening in people's mental health. And so I was on the way driving to the studio to write with a friend of mine who I wrote Before I Go with, Jamie okay. Hartman. That's who I wrote Standing With You with, but I was on Instagram in the Uber, and my cousin, who were very close, he uploaded this whole post about his battle with depression, and I had no idea. But he was basically saying, this is what I've gone through, this is what it feels like, and this is what I did, which helped me a lot. And he was talking about hobbies that he'd taken up and things that helped him get through his depression. And so there was quite a lot of heaviness going into that songwriting session. And then I get to the session, and Jamie has kids with respiratory disorders.
Okay.
So he was like on edge about COVID right. because there's like a shortage of respirators in the US, and he's worried about his kids. And like, so I just felt like we needed to write a song that was a message for people to just know that they're not alone, that we're standing with each other, and that we're thinking of one another. And even though we're in isolation, we're still connected in some way. And so I remember when this doesn't happen obviously in a lot of other songwriting sessions, because that would be weird, but we wrote the song, and then when it came to putting the first vocal down, I got from the, you know, sometimes you'll punch in for the verse, let's do a few verses, let's do sure. the second verse, then let's get some choruses and blah, blah, blah. That song we just did from top to, like Before I Go, same thing, because I wanted to feel like it was a live vocal. I sung it from top to bottom the first time. We got to the end and he hits, you know, space bar to stop the recording. And then there was just this kind of moment of silence, and then we both just burst into tears. It was like a really weird moment. But I think we knew that we'd created something that was emotional and that was going to help people in that time. And I'm so glad that it did, because especially, you know, here in Australia, it was a really big song for me, that song. That song was bigger than Before I Go, I think. And so, yeah, it was a really important song and definitely an emotional one. I would say the thing that I probably connect with a lot on the album, because it's the most recent song that I've recorded, I had my two little boys right here. And that I got them to record this song called Inner World. And so that song is basically kind of also about what I was speaking about before, about just the current state of the world. And it's a song I wrote for Archie, my youngest kid. He's 6 years old. And I'd already written one for Hudson like a few years ago. Hudson was in the womb, not my womb, obviously. he was in Jules's womb, and I wrote this song called Big Bad World. And I played at my shows sometimes, and Archie, my youngest, comes up to me and said, "Dad, Hudson has a song, Big Bad World. Will I ever have a song?" And I was like, "Oh, little Archie, I'm going to write him a song." So I wrote him this song, and it's basically just a song called Inner World that says, like, my prayer is that he will live in a world where teachers can teach without training for a tragedy, where you can love the one you love and go about it openly, where, you know, basically just a world that's safe, a world that is going to get better and heal and come together. And obviously we're right in the middle of the election and the rhetoric from the Biden camp that we need to heal. But I mean, it's obviously an important thing globally.
Sure.
I feel like there's a lot of that that's needing to happen. And so it was, yeah, I don't know. That was probably the most emotional song of late for me, because every time my kids come in, like when I hear that song and my kids come in towards the end, it's hard to keep it together. It's just so cute.
But that goes into kind of goes into that whole sentiment of the having good people around you and not feeling alone, because you have your wife and you have your children. And there's a couple of songs where you kind of say to your wife, "Hey, you're perfect for me. You don't have to change anything." So that kind of and going into mental health, that being kind to each other, that seeing people for who they are and not thinking about the bullshit around it. How did you, because you managed, you mentioned the first 15 years of your career were very fast and fast paced. I'm sure it was a roller coaster for you. So how have you kind of come to that realization to enjoy the little things and to enjoy the kind of the company you have and that those kind of things?
Because I think it was, you know, me slowing down. And I slowed down before COVID.
Okay.
I think the thing that happened with my manager really, really shook me as well. Mm-hmm. And there was people around me that maybe I was doing this too and pushing away and not letting a lot of people in. Mm. And so, you know, there was like my friends, my label were really there for me. And I'm not saying that just because Bronwyn's on the call, but she was there for me. And you know, there was a group of people who were really kind of, I let in and had this trust for them. And it just changed my life. Like I think there's, you know, and you mentioned Jules, like there is a bit of a recurring theme in a couple of songs like Who I Love and Believer, where it's not about, I feel like relationships where we're so quick to dwell on the negative things and the, like what we deem as flaws. And it helps us to really see the beauty in people. You know, we concentrate on the negative stuff. And that's just who we all are. And if we can start to look inwardly and go, oh, there's some pretty bad, crappy things about myself that people, and people still love me. Like, so I need to be a better person like that. And I need to be more patient and accepting and love people and even love their flaws, because that's what makes them beautiful. And so, yeah, there's a bit of a theme with that. One of my favorite songs is Believer, and that's something I wrote for my wife. And yeah,
well, what I find interesting then, when you write a song like that, do you show it to her beforehand and throughout the creative process?
No, not that one. I wait. Normally I show her like on the day of the demo, or I'll be like, she's bathing the kids or something. I'm like, quick, come in. I've just done a demo. Like, have a listen. What do you think? She's really honest with me. So I've played her a lot of songs. So she's like, that's all right. Or she's like, that's a good one. That's a keeper. And, but when I played her Believer, it was a bit more advanced. I'd recorded the final vocal and waited till it sounded a little nicer, and then when I played it for her, she was crying, and that's I think I knew that I'd struck a chord with her and that it meant something to her. And so if it wasn't a great song, I knew worst case scenario it meant something to her. So
sure. Yeah. And then overall, and we kind of touched upon this, but to round off and to have all these very personal songs, very, very positive songs, and then to get the reaction that it did, what does that do to you? And what does that tell you about kind of where you as an artist are at the moment?
Look, I think there's never a formula, and every now and then all the stars align. And I made an album that was a really honest account of all the emotions and how I've processed those emotions and the things that have transpired, I made an honest album at a time where I think people just want authenticity. And so I think the stars aligned, and, you know, I don't think there's ever a formula, because people have probably made honest albums that didn't resonate because the time wasn't ready to receive honesty. So I don't really know. I don't think there's ever a formula in music. Some things just connect, you know. Why was Before I Go such a huge song in the Netherlands, but then when I released it somewhere else, they weren't ready for it, you know, and then that place started liking it later on. You know, it's sort of weird. Like Standing With You is a hit somewhere. And all artists have that. Like you release songs and it's like hit somewhere, but not a hit somewhere else. How do you explain that? We're all people. And so I just think, you know, I think there's many, many factors that obviously go into that. But I think art is created sometimes at the opportune time and the perfect time for people to receive it.
Sounds good. All right, Guy.
Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for sitting down with me. It was very interesting. And I love that.
I sat down and had like a counseling session, to be honest. I feel like I'm talking to my therapist.
I hope in a good way then.
In a very good way.
Okay, that's good. No, but I really did enjoy the album, and then especially the I loved certain elements of the way background choirs were used. It just really pushed certain elements forward, and it was just a very cohesive. It was a fun album to listen to, even though despite
everything, kind of sounds like there's a common thread, maybe except for the last track.
yeah, exactly. Well, that one is a little bit more, a different way. But I felt it was very, very together, and just a fun listen in this time.
Because that was a conscious effort, you know. And I was never going to put Fantasize on the album, but okay. I just loved the song, and I loved the that's the Orphanage producers as well.
All right.
The production on that is crazy. Like the beats and like just the layers of stuff, their production is insane. And I couldn't let that beat go. But I wrote that song so fast. We were in a writing session, and I felt like that was one of those moments where I kept thinking to myself, have I ripped off another song? Because this feels like I'm just singing a song that's already been written. It was weird. I don't think I've ripped off a song, but it just really came out really quickly. And then I thought, you know what, I'll just put it on. Like, it's like those old school R&B albums where they put like a little sexy time song at the very end, the last track.
And sure. Let me ask one last thing then, because you reminded me of something. When you write as much as you do, and you've written now 9 albums, or you released 9 albums, does the creativity become more difficult in a way to come up with new things, or is it just as easy as?
I don't think so. No, I feel like I'm constantly writing all the time. Yeah, like I feel like it's more now than ever. Like it's for me, I go through waves of creativity, and I'll write when I'm loving music. So I write when I'm listening to heaps of music, like when I'm on Spotify or whatever, and I'm seeking out like different artists and to discover and to like when I'm digesting music, I almost get jealous, like that I'm listening to something else and I want to make something. Like it's weird. It's like I just get it's like this itch to create my own.
Oh, that's very good that you still have that fire. That. It's a constant thing throughout kind of your creativity.
More now than ever. Like I love discovering instruments, and like I love to like, yeah, it's the best. I love it.
Awesome. All right, Guy. Yeah. Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
You're awesome, bro. Thank you. I hope to meet you when I'm there next time.
Yeah, well, hopefully you get to come here very soon and you get to play that song again for everybody.
I'll sing it just once this time.
Well, maybe in the encore if people shout.
Quite possibly. I can't say no if they shout.
All right, man. Have a great evening. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Bron.
Thank you so much.
Oh, sorry, you're there. Thanks, Robin. Thanks, Guy.
Thanks for setting all of this up and everything.
No problem. Anytime.
All right. Thanks for your passion, bro. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Thank you.